Ira, when you hit the pool and you're hanging with Cosmo and your beautiful wife and you go back in the house and you see some water that doesn't look like what splashed off your feet, some strange water and something smells, what do you do?
Well, the first thing I think of is Cosmo made a mistake in the house. That's the first thing I think of. But then I take a little closer look, and it's water, and it's mold. And when I see that, I don't hesitate. I call Florida's Elite Restoration. They're going to come out. They're going to give you an honest assessment of what's going on.
That's the key, Ira. The first sign of water, even if you're coming home from work, you see a puddle of water under the kitchen sink, doesn't belong there. You don't know what happened. It smells. Maybe it's been there 4 hours or 3 days. Call Florida's Elite Restoration. Get to their website, floridaseliterestoration.com. They'll come out free, get their thermal imaging cameras out there, figure out what's going on, and they will guide you through the insurance process if it's even necessary. Mold remediation specialists, it's important to call them first. Doesn't cost anything.
Absolutely. Florida's Elite Restoration.
Our many thanks to the many thousands of Ira Kaufman podcast listeners each week at joebucksfan.com. And of course, so many of you listen at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, other platforms. Add on those podcast platforms, you can subscribe to the podcast. That just gets you a nice free alert so you know when it's posting. Otherwise, keep listening at joebucksfan.com. All the fun is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford. BillCurryFord.com. Right there, you can value your trade-in, and they are paying top dollar for trade-ins right now. Get to BillCurryFord.com. They are home of the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. General Manager Sean Sullivan is going to take great care of you. Bill Curry Ford.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bucks fans, NFL fans, the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports is back. Episode 1 of this week, the Ira Kaufman podcast, presented by Bill Curry Ford, runs twice a week. And of course, it stars the custodian of Canton, the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, Uncle Ira, the King of Newport Richie. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. And we have got so much to talk about, Ira, and we have our special guest coming up later, Mike Allstott. But first, Ira, how are you? You've been busy with the Hall of Fame. What's on your mind?
Got through with a long Zoom call yesterday with four of my compatriots, veteran scribes. What did we all share? We're old. We're old, gentlemen. And that's fine, because we're picking senior candidates, guys that played in the 60s and 70s, and we picked a coach, Tom Flores. I am not a Flores guy. And I didn't vote for him, but I was outvoted. You know, as far as how I'm feeling, guys, I kind of think all the news out of One Buck Place, granted it's only been, you know, 2-3 weeks, it's all positive. There really hasn't been any steps backward. COVID, injuries, guys not showing up late, and of course Arians in rare form saying, ask Jesus. Lee, I know that that line got to you. The Kemper, that's a hell of a line by Arians.
That's an all-timer, man.
But, Steve, it's all positive. Now, look, you know, we're less than a month away from going into that Superdome for a little bit of a statement game against a three-time division champ. Team you got to knock off its pedestal. But, guys, I don't think the Glazers or Jason Light or Arians could have asked for a better 2-3 weeks. Lee, I don't see any negatives yet.
The only negative I can tell, and, you know, a lot of people like, who cares, but the backup, the second-string defense, they got their rear ends chewed and had to run for punishment because they were loafing, and I thought that was pretty good. But I was out of practice Tuesday. I could tell you, and that defense looked at least the run defense, and specifically the left side of the defense, they swarmed the ball. We're gang tackle. I don't care if it was a Brady quick pitch, not even a quick pitch, it was a quick out to the sideline, or Ronald Jones trying to run around right end. That defense was on them like stink on crap. It was that to me stuck out as much as Brady's precision, was how the defense, at least the left side of the defense, was just flying to the ball.
As far as Lee talking about run defense, and Steve, we don't have any reason to believe that the Bucks should not have a stout rush defense again. They brought most of the guys back, and I can't believe little Khalil Nassib is going to be the difference maker in terms of run defense. And, Steve, when you think about it, especially going into year two in the bowl system, I know those corners were young last year and the safeties too, but when you constantly have teams in third and six and third and eight, you should play some damn good pass defense, Steve. And in that regard, at least through 10 weeks, because the run defense was good from week one. It never wavered. And, boy, was that pass defense in that regard absolutely horrible until they were out of the playoff race at 3-7. Steve, shouldn't they have played a lot better pass defense considering, you know, the other teams were at a disadvantage in terms of yard and distance?
Sage, let me clarify a couple of things. What you were referring to is Justin Evans. Justin Evans, Bucs safety. Arians was asked about him yesterday. He was asked about his prognosis, if you will, for returning after a couple of years of injuries. And Arians said, talk to Jesus. That's what he said. That's the quote.
I have no clue.
That is not exactly a phrase of encouragement for Justin Evans, Stephen. It is not.
I am just too excited about this year to even start talking about last year's 10 games. But I agree with you, of course. It makes it look worse when your run defense is so good. And, you know, we'll see. But a couple of things on the run defense, since you brought it up, Sage. And they're not negatives. They're just sort of question marks. One good, one bad. We don't know how Vita Vea is going to react wearing this club and how long he'll actually wear it. You know, with a club, it might take him a little while to get used to it. Number two, I'll say the one time there was one team, Ira, if you look up the numbers, one team that the Bucs struggled against with the run compared to all the other teams they played. That was the Saints. And on the upside, Devin White was adamant today that he is going to play 10 times faster. That's the quote. 10 times faster this year. One, because he knows the defense, and two, because he's not running around with the knee brace that he really said held him back.
You know, that knee brace, I think that's a big thing in terms of evaluating Devin White. Lee, it's not so much that how did Devin White play when he got back on the field. It's how did Devin White play when he shed the damn brace. I remember talking to him after a game late in the season, and I asked him about that brace. And he didn't want to talk about it during the time that he was wearing it, Lee, for those weeks. He didn't want to use it as a crutch or anything. But at the end of the year, when he's looking backwards, he said it was a big problem, Lee. It hampered his mobility. He thought about it. He's not a kid that's been injured much throughout his career. And it's got a weigh on your mind. He knows it's there. And even though he was tabbed to be in shape and ready to play, Lee, good enough to play, that doesn't mean he was 100%. Far from it. And having said that, you know, he still flashed a little bit at the end of the season. Didn't have a great rookie season. Had a decent rookie season. But to me, Lee, he showed enough promise to fantasize, you know, about what he could be. That brace was a big problem, Lee, last season.
He said today he felt like a robot with the brace on, and I can understand that. I thought he had a pretty good rookie season, except for the very reason he was drafted number five overall, rushing the quarterback. He struggled, and that was my only gripe with Devin White. That's my only gripe. You know, he was supposed to be, you know, this world's greatest inside pass rusher. That's why you drafted him number five. We don't need Josh Allen. We're going to get Devin White. Well, that so far, that philosophy failed. Doesn't mean he's not a good player, but the reason why you drafted him, he's not exactly excelling at that.
On top of that, isn't there a suggestion, guys, that White will be used in a different manner as a blitzer this year? More from an outside than right up the gut. I don't know. I don't know if that's going to work either, Steve.
Well, I think they'll only do that if they have to, because they need some more depth on the edge rushing, which they don't have. They did sign a defensive tackle, Kyle Love, a guy who played with the Patriots in a Super Bowl, played with Carolina in a Super Bowl, but he's not an edge rusher. So, you know, the talk was White could evolve into a little bit of that when necessary. But I think the key nugget today, Ira, for me anyway, was him really overemphasizing that, man, I am going to be so much faster, it's going to blow your mind. And that very well could be why he was missing on those blitzes, because he was, you know, a step slow.
No question about it. By the way, speaking of blitzes, tell me if I'm wrong, guys, but...
You're wrong.
if I was Bowles, and I'm not, and I'm not considered a defensive guru, I'm considered a big storm, big storm guru in terms of Cubans and Rubens. But Levante David, you know, look, I don't think we got to go back to 2012 or 2013, but the guy proved he was a hell of a blitzer when you use him in the right way. Coming off, the right, the weak side linebacker spot. What about Levante David? Why can't they get him going as a blitzer anymore, really? What's going on there?
Maybe that's just not his strength. I know, everybody thought that was going to be the case when he was a rookie with Shiano, and after I watched this past season with Todd Bowles and this defense, it's come to my conclusion, not that this should be a shot, but it's come to my conclusion that the previous two coaching staffs defensively were simply inept. And so we're bragging about, Bowles and these guys are so great at defensive coaches. They may be. I'm not saying they're not. But I'm starting to think these guys, their predecessors were that pitiful, that anything would have been, just an average coaching staff would have made these guys rise up significantly, which is what happened last year. I mean, if you look back, what did the Bucs do average the two previous seasons, two previous coaching staffs under the Smiths, Lovey and Mike? What did they do? Maybe they were okay at the run. Maybe. But other than that, those were pitiful defenses.
Staying on this blitz theme for a second, I believe according to the stats, Stephen, that the Bucs were one of the heavy blitzing teams in the league last season.
Yeah, number one.
Okay, number one. There you go, Stephen. Thank you for that. And, Steve, maybe some of those blitzes were run blitzes. Steve, I guess my question for you and Lee is, could you suggest, you tell me, but this compulsion, this obsession to stop the run, which they were very, very successful by any yardstick last season, but the resources that were used in doing so, couldn't you make an argument that that ended up costing them in terms of pass defense, and it's a passing league, and in terms of points per game, this defense wasn't very good. So could you make the argument that this rush to stop the run maybe might be a little bit overrated?
I know where you're getting at, Ira, and I don't think you're inaccurate. If you're going to be really good at one thing, and it's a passing league, why don't you be really good pass defense? And maybe they overemphasized the run, but perhaps they were looking at the personnel at hand and thought, well, we have a better chance of being first in run as opposed to pass by the guys we have on the staff. We don't have to make a thorough overhaul. It'll be quicker if we add to the run defense than the pass defense. That could be part of it.
You got a Golston, and you got a Sue, and you got a Villa. Yeah, I understand that.
And you got Levante David. And I agree. Almost every defensive coach will tell you this. Their absolute goal, no matter what, obviously outside of stopping an offense, was to get an offense to be one-dimensional.
Everybody says it.
Because they get predictable then, and that's when things happen. So that's also, I think, another element. They're like, at least we can force people to pass on us.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get pressure on the quarterback. We'll take our chances there. So that could possibly be it as well. What I'd like to find out, I would love to ask Bowles, what changed when you got rid of Vernon Hargraves? That, to me, is no coincidence. That defense turned a page when they got rid of Hargraves. I'm starting to think that the defensive back is overcompensating to help out Hargraves.
Yeah, can you imagine doing that for the 11th pick in the draft? Boy, that's...
Ira, I think you're overthinking this a little bit, Ira, just a little bit. Let's say you're a team that's great against the pass. What do you do when the other team runs the ball? You try to stop them. You try to stop the run, period. Every team does it. They're just not every team's that good at it. Look, the Bucs ran with a bunch of rookie corners and Vernon Hargraves, and they got their asses burned. End of story. Yeah. It just ends right there. They're hoping for better this year. And, you know, the pass rush, I hope it can be as good. As far as the blitzing goes, Lavonte David, we just don't know. I mean, he had a good late season rush and a bunch of sacks with Lovie. That was actually, nobody likes to talk about it, and it wasn't effective as far as a scoring defense, as you like to call it, but they still had a top 10 defense with Lovie, which we haven't seen here since the glory days. They still led the NFL in yards per carry against the lowest yards per carry NFC with Lovie. So we've seen this before. Lavonte just wasn't able to get there when he blitzed over and over and over again in 2016 with Mike Smith. And they even had Kendall Beckwith blitzing a lot. Sorry, 2017. So, you know, hopefully he can revive that aspect of his game. But the pass rush was still good last year. So if it's not Lavonte getting the sacks, I'm okay with it as long as the pass rush is good.
You know, staying on that pass rush, and this will be music to the ears of Mr. DeKemper. He will absolutely love this. It may make his day more than talk to Jesus. I'm looking at the Bucs, and I agree with Steve. The pass rush was pretty good in 2019. Of course, when you got the number one sacker in the league, it helps a lot. But, Lee, I'm a little concerned that they don't have enough pass rushers. And if Barrett or JPP go down, I see a problem. I mean, Nassib wasn't bad. He wasn't bad as a third wheel. He's not here. We don't know what Nelson can do. Sue's not much of a factor anymore in that regard. V is still growing in that regard. I don't know if they got enough pass rushers, Lee.
You might be right, but I really, really struggle. I mean, really struggle trying to wrap my head around the Bucs could collapse if they don't have Carl Nassib coming off the bench. I really struggle with that. That's like, he was okay. Yeah. I mean, really okay. I mean, a guy with a broken neck put him on the bench. Let's be honest here. Guy the Browns ran off. I can't wrap my head around that. The make or break player for the Bucs if JPP and or Shaq gets hurt is Carl Nassib not being on the roster.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I can't do that. I'm sorry. Yep. I fully agree with you. JPP goes down, this team's screwed.
You know, Steve, they say you never have enough pass rushers, and you got to avoid the injuries. You got to have some depth, Steve, and, you know, unless you're fortunate, and if those two are together, I think the Bucs will be okay. But, you know, the 49ers, you see what they do. You see what Lynch's philosophy is. In that regard, and it certainly helps. I think that could be a problem there, Steve.
Yeah, potentially. Look, that's why we mentioned Devin White possibly coming off the edge, because, and it's not, we didn't bring that up. The regime brought that up because it's a possibility due to the lack of depth. Can't have the depth everywhere. Ira, today, Harold Goodwin, assistant head coach, offensive line, he took to the Zoom podium at One Buck Palace. And I asked him, I said, look, I was waiting to ask him this. I said, it's a tough balance, and can you talk about it, to want to try to get a rookie like Tristan Wirfs ready for opening day, but not just beat the hell out of the guy to get in shape mentally and physically, you know, to not overload him? How do you balance that in such a short timetable in a weird situation? Goodwin basically said that he talked to Arians as soon as they returned and said, how do you want me to handle this, coach? And Arians said, take the kid gloves off and just be all over him. So Goodwin said they're pushing him as hard as humanly possible, and so far so good. What do you make of that?
Well, I think a couple of points here. One, and I don't always take Arians at his word, especially when he says crazy things like, you know, I love our running game and our offensive line is concerns are the farthest thing from my mind. I mean, that's coach talk. But I kind of think, and this goes back to something Arian said last week, I'd say Wirfs 85% is going to line up, you know, at the Superdome week one. There's a chance he doesn't, Lee. And I think this Joe Haig, you know, who's no world beater, but he's a backup, and as a backup, pretty good. And I think Arians knows enough about Haig, and I think it's changed his mind a little bit about the right tackle spot, where I don't think Arians thinks he's going to be out to lunch, at least early next season, if Wirfs is an immediate starter. I expect Wirfs to start. I think you do too, Lee. But I think the addition of Haig, that's a sneaky good move by Light. That's a sneaky good move. If they didn't have Haig, you're looking at like, hey, what if Wirfs isn't ready? What the heck are they going to do? They got Kappa. They're going to put another inexperienced guy next to Kappa. And that could be a problem because, you know, the Saints got a pretty darn good defense. I think they were 11th in the league in defense last season. So, Lee, I like the idea of throwing everything at Wirfs, see what he's got. But I'll say this, Lee, if he doesn't start week one, once the season starts, and if Haig's playing well, it might be tough to dislodge Haig. So, look, we're getting ahead of ourselves, I know. But Wirfs is going to struggle a little bit in training camp. I think he's already shown some issues, like any rookie. Lee, keep your eye on this Joe Haig guy. I think Arians likes him.
If my timeline is correct, I'm thinking Haig was signed before the draft.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's right.
There's no guarantee the Bucs are going to have Wirfs. So I think tentatively, before the draft, Haig was going to be your starting tackle, depending on what happened in the draft. So I don't think it was an accident or anything. I really believe that they were set up for, okay, if things don't fall right in the draft, we've got our starting right tackle.
Sage, Arians said today that Josh Wells, backup tackle, has gained 20 pounds and looks really good. And never fear, the Earl of Watford...
What's his mustache like?
And never fear, the Earl of Watford, Ira, has not been picked up. So he's out there, ready to join the team if necessary. The man made all those starts last year for the third best offense in the NFL, so they're covered.
You know, Steve, this goes back to something you've pointed out many times on this podcast. I think it's really a critical point in some respects when you look at the 12-year playoff drought and the lack of talent at certain spots. And maybe you could make this argument, guys, maybe for other teams in this league, but we're focused on this franchise. And gosh darn it, you know, guys, there's been so many guys, so many, over the last 5, 6, 7 seasons that start 14 games for the Bucs and then hit the trail on free agency, and their career is over. Steve, mm-hmm. It happens all the time. Maybe that happens in New England. Maybe it happens in Philadelphia. We don't keep that kind of an eye on it, but Lee, it sure happens a lot in Tampa.
Especially guys that banked on to be starters. Swaggy Baker, Robert Ayers. You're exactly right, Ira.
Collins ended his career. He's done.
Well, the Bucs ended his career on purpose. They told him to go home, not come back.
Ira, in New England, it happens in reverse. It actually happens all the time. Belichick gets a lot out of a guy, lets him go, and he does nothing, and he's out of the league. In Tampa, a guy doesn't do well, they let him go, and nobody wants him. So it runs in the different direction kind of thing.
You know, your starter isn't good enough to be a backup somewhere else. I mean, that's a tough message, Lee.
Darrell Revis isn't good enough for the Bucs. Guy's going to have a freaking bust in Canton in a couple of years. He's not good enough for the Bucs, so we'll replace him with Antoine Verner or Mike Jenkins.
Steve, we could...
And people wonder why this team keeps losing. A person in a mental health institution would know better than to do. A drunk in a bar would know better not to do that. But you're paying a guy $3, $4, $5 billion to make those kind of decisions?
We could do a whole week of podcasts on how the Revis issue was handled. Unbelievable.
Ira, LeSean McCoy is impressing people over at $1. Bruce Arians said he looks fantastic. Devin White was glowing about how he's never seen anybody like McCoy and that he's teaching him a lot because he's different than anybody on the roster, even the way he holds the football. And he called him
Whoa. He's teaching Ronald Jones to hold the football like he holds the football?
I said Devin White. Devin White, I said.
All right.
You're hung up on that.
Take it easy. I know you think he holds it like a loaf of bread. Take it easy.
I do.
But I bring this up because the day before, Devin White and Bruce Arians were glowing about Shady. He goes on Twitter and creates a new hashtag for himself, 12K Chase, meaning he's after 12,000 yards rushing. Now, he has 11,037 or something. So it almost feels like Shady got the lay of the land in Tampa, is getting the vibe from the coaches, and is sensing how he feels, and he's just almost decided, like, you know what? I can get 940 yards for this team and go over 12,000 yards. I don't know. Am I reading too much into that, Ira? And what do you think of all the love for McCoy?
Well, that's how he's looking at it. If I'm McCoy, maybe I'm looking at it too. And who knows? Maybe he figures in 2 or 3 years he built up enough of a resume to get a look at Canton, Ohio. I mean, if the guy's got 14,000 yards, you got to at least look at him. Frank Gore's going to get in, and he ain't Gale Sayers. But, you know, he puts the yards up like Curtis Martin, and all of a sudden, you know, you might have a gold jacket. So, you know, that could be driving McCoy a little bit too. I don't see any way this is going to happen, Lee, because, you know, while Arians was praising McCoy on Wednesday, and Steve, you don't miss a thing over there. I know you, and you got good hearing. Didn't he also say the very last thing he said about McCoy was, as long as we don't wear him out, or we're not going to wear him out, I still say he's going to be a role player, Lee, maybe an important player, as long as he practices ball security. I think he could be a factor. He could contribute. But, Lee, I don't see him being the number one guy. I don't see it.
And I'm suspicious about Rojo being the number one guy. And I base that not on anything I've seen thus far. And, by the way, I didn't see anything when I was at a practice the other day either. That's really unfair to go after a guy, so I'm not. But I saw more from Keyshawn Vaughn than I did Rojo.
Right.
Yesterday. I hate to say that because it's only one practice, only an hour and a half, so that's really not fair. I've got to be honest. But anyway, what did the Bucks do this offseason?
They drafted and got a veteran.
Talk is one thing, action's another. So action's telling me that if Rojo is that number one guy, he's got little rope to work with.
Well, I would say that holds true for a lot of players on this team. When you're in win-now mode, now, look, if Mike Evans drops a ball in week two, you know, it's not going to affect him. He's got the track record and whatever. But guys like O.J. Howard, short leash. Steve, short leash. Alex Kappa, short leash. What do you got, Kappa? I got Joe Haig ready to step into that spot. What do you got? So I agree with Lee in that regard on Ronald Jones. There's no fooling around this year, Steve. No fooling around with this coaching staff. They know what's at stake.
Ira, now a couple of pieces of news that we have to get to. But first, speaking of no fooling around, bottom line, opening day, Buccaneers at the Saints, 4:25 kickoff. The Sage of Tampa Bay Sports will be at Big Storm Brewery, Clearwater, the flagship location, just south of Ulmerton Road on 49th Street. Watching the Bucks in a Bucks-friendly place with great sound, with Bucks fans. And we recommend you get there early because there's no crowding the place over social distancing rules or anything like that. You want to get your seat and enjoy for the day. Everyone's going to be in their seat. And there's limited seating, of course. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Ira's going to be out there. And it's just going to be great, great energy. Now, of course, Big Storm Beer, you can drink that anytime you want. It is Florida's best craft beer, the Bromosa, the Tangerine IPA. Ira loves the Tropic Pressure, Florida Ale, and the Bromosa. Their classic Wavemaker Amber Ale is out there in the stores. The Palm Bender IPA. There are so many great Big Storm beers. You can find them at bigstormbrewery.com. The food is A+. And Ira, I got a look at the outdoor area at Big Storm Brewery. This amazing outdoor area, the full steel covering is in place now. People are enjoying it outside. I don't know yet if the full bar fun setup is going to be for football outside, but either way, we're going to have a great time. We got giveaways, and this is going to be a great, fun opening day.
I'm glad to know that they're making great progress on that outdoor venue. They think it's going to be one of the great beer gardens in all of Tampa Bay, and from what I saw a couple of weeks ago, at the 49th Street venue, Clearwater location. I think it's going to meet those expectations. Steve, you left out one important spot about that New Orleans opener. The Man Beast, Zach, will be on hand, correct?
Man Beast, Zach, the intern, he's going to get there, and he's no longer the intern. He's out of school. But he's going to be there when they open to make sure your seat is not touched. He's going to be sanitizing your chair.
Can you imagine what's going on over there at DeKemper?
He will be guarding your chair and your silverware. And I will show up a little bit later, and then the sage will make his entrance probably around 3 o'clock. But we hope you come a little earlier, Ira, because we know you love to stuff your face. And of course, you won't be paying for anything. But a lot of fun, a lot of fun ahead. Big Storm Brewing Company. We'll talk more about that as we get closer.
I broke down this past weekend and went there and decided to buy the Brumosa. I'm usually kind of skittish about strong beers. And so I bought a 4-pack, got home, you know, controlled environment. That's a worry. Man, is that good beer. I think I got a new favorite beer, and I'm being dead serious when I say that.
You're a connoisseur. You've been through a lot of beers, baby.
I've been through a lot of beers, yes. This Brumosa is some good stuff. So, you know, get yourself a controlled environment, buy a 4-pack, bring it home. You won't be disappointed. Trust me.
Ira, the Buccaneers are going to have two practices at Raymond James Stadium. Bruce Arians called them, quote, games, meaning scrimmage games against each other. He said at least one will be under the lights so the team can get used to that. Part of it will be for the operations purposes of the stadium people getting a nice dry run without a preseason game. But one reason that's a little bit interesting, Ira, is because I talked to Mike Allstott today, and we're going to hear from him right after this. We sat down and had a little chat. One of the things I brought up to him is how much the team needs to hit each other to really get ready for a game in this weird environment. And we ran through a couple of scenarios, and we're going to hear from Mike's explanation before Bruce Arians even made this announcement. But what are your thoughts there, and how do you think that's going to go?
I think it's imperative. You match or exceed, hopefully exceed, the physicality of the Saints in week one. On the physicality front, maybe I've been a little rough here, but I just don't think the Bucs is a very overly physical team. Lee, I don't see it over the last years. So in terms of hitting each other, you can't go into the Superdome soft. You're going to get your butt whipped. What's going to happen is Brady's going to be under too much pressure from a good pass rush led by Cam Jordan. And they got guys like Davenport. They got other guys besides Jordan. And then on the other side, you won't be able to get to Drew Brees. And if you don't get to Drew Brees and get him uncomfortable, you're in for a hell of a long day. And he's proven that to the Bucs for about 15 years. 15 years he's been tormenting this team. And everybody says, oh, you got to rush Drew Brees up the middle and get him out of the pocket. Well, no, nobody can do it. You talk about it, nobody does it. And I think you're going to hear the same kind of talk about Brady this year. You got to rush Brady up the middle. Get him, on the flanks where he can't hurt you, where Jameis Winston was pretty darn effective in that area when he broke the pocket. So, Lee, I think hitting is going to be vital, and I think Arians knows it. He's given the word to the coaching staff on both sides of the ball. We have to be mentally and physically ready for a physical football game in New Orleans. And, Lee, if they're not, they're going to get their butt whipped.
Well, I don't know that you can label a team that has the number one rush defense as not physical. I don't think that's possible to have a non-physical team be the best rush defense in the league.
But fair point, Lee. Fair point. I might have been thinking more about the offense.
Perhaps. You might be right there. But I think Jensen's physical. I think Alan Marpet's physical. Donovan Smith, when he wants to be, can be physical. He's certainly big enough. So you might be right.
All right, guys, let's head over to Mike Allstott. A lot of cool things he had to say. Of course, he professed his love for Bill Curry Ford, where he is a customer as well. And we'll talk about some more, plenty more, on the other side. All right, as promised, Mike Allstott, the A-Train, is back on the Ira Kaufman podcast. Always a great thing, especially with training camp here. Mike, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And of course, we're presented by Bill Curry Ford. We'll talk more about them later. Mike, we could talk to you all day, but we don't have all day. But I got to ask you right away, LeSean McCoy comes into the Bucks as a veteran, a guy who might be a Hall of Famer one day. And what did you think of that move when you've heard it? What do you think he can offer here? And I also wanted to ask you, what's the balance for a guy like McCoy who comes in? He wants to be the guy. He wants to play with Tom Brady. And he's with a bunch of running backs who are 23 years old. How does he sort of balance, you know, wanting to be his best and still help these guys out at the same time who want to take his job?
Don't hate on us older players. You know what I mean? No, but in general, it's a great addition, especially when you have some young backs and you have a veteran guy that's been in it for a long time, has been very successful, again, with a lot of experience coming in and teaching. And the other thing is his locker room presence, you know, knows how to win, knows how to do the daily grind. That's important. That's important, how to figure out that grind is big time, you know, especially being a professional and understanding what you need to do to maintain your body, your mind, how to prepare, and how to do the little things each and every day to withstand that long season. And then you have a guy that's going to be a locker room presence, a veteran guy, a locker room presence.
Sure.
And help some of these younger guys, and add with Tom Brady and Mike Evans and everybody else that's on the team.
And with no preseason games, Mike, can you even imagine what that is like for this group right now with the Bucks? You know, they're trying to put everything together in a hurry, in a Super Bowl kind of way. This isn't a rebuilding year. What do you think the no preseason game means for this team, specifically some of the challenges that are there?
Yeah, I know it's tough. It can be real tough. After you get out of those first 2 weeks of starting training camp, and then you have something looking forward to, you're preparing for a game, and you're just playing different opponents. You're playing a different team. You're getting in a different atmosphere. When I was playing, we went and see, the Dolphins. We'd go to Miami if we were playing there, and we'd go against them for 2 days before the game. And just seeing different looks and doing different things, and getting the evaluation, getting back into that game mode, the practice mode. So it's going to be really, really tough, and guys are going to, I shouldn't say lose focus, but again, it just gets repetitive when you're doing the same thing over and over again. You know, there's no stimulation. It's going to be a real big challenge.
How much tackling and real hitting do you think these guys need to do on each side of the ball to really be ready for game one? I know Bruce Arians he was around back when you guys had two-a-days and were killing each other at the University of Tampa. But in today's day and age, he doesn't want to hit a lot, but he knows he has to. How much do you think they really have to do to get ready to play a football game?
I think it's important for a couple reasons to have some, basically, when you talk about it, some inter-squad games of some sort, scrimmages, situational, right? When I was at the Bucks, you know, a lot of our heavy hitting was backed up or in goal line situations and doing that. And obviously we would do blitz pickup, which would be full contact, but there wasn't really no, in the middle of the field, 20 to 20 tackling and stuff. But, you know, to get the true evaluation of some of these players that you don't know what they're going to do, yeah, you're going to have to. You're going to have to do something just to see if these kids are going to make the team. Especially, you know, you have your 25, your 30, your 35 guys that you feel really comfortable with, and you know their skill sets, you know what they can do. Now you just got to hone that up and get ready for the season. But there are, you know, a number of kids that, you know, are going to try to make the team through special teams and whatnot, and you gotta have some light tackling. You know, everybody looks good in shorts and helmets, but when you put the pads on, the game gets real.
Sure. If you had to put a number on it, you think maybe they need 100 live plays to try to maybe 2 days worth of like real game type full practice? You have any thoughts on that?
I don't know how they're structuring it. I just heard the other day that, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong, they just put pads on the other day, didn't they? pads on the other day.
They just came on Monday for the first time, and even before...
After like 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, so they can do it for 14 practices with pads if they choose to do that many. And then before you know it, you're 10 days out from the first game.
Yeah, so I think, you know, every time you have when you do have padded practices, maybe there's a situational live period, right? Like I said, you know, Saturdays after our first week, after our second week, excuse me, we would do goal line, script live, and backed up live, you know what I mean? And maybe they're doing, every time they're in pads, maybe do a live period of some sort, if it's backed up or if it's, you know, red zone or if it's middle of the field, short yardage, goal line. So they're getting some type of live contact, live tackling, not the whole practice though, you know what I mean? So they're getting that stimulation in each practice when they're in pads of some sort. When I was playing, we were in pads every day. Now, obviously, it's a lot different.
Sure.
I'm not sure how they're going to do it, and I get it.
I was just curious only because this is all new ground. You know, nobody's ever touched this before. So the coaches might even be feeling it out, so I just wanted to see what you thought.
Even with that, you know, as a coach, and you have to get your number one guy with some live situations, and you're just like grimacing the whole time going, oh, please don't get hurt in this. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But again, it's football, and if you're going to be scared about getting hurt, you know, you're in the wrong industry.
We saw on Buccaneers.com, you know, they put a lot of highlights up there from the practices, and Rob Gronkowski took a huge shot from a safety after he had caught the ball and had already beaten the linebacker covering him, and you got the feeling somebody yelled at the safety behind the scenes, but you know what? They hadn't blown the whistle yet, and if you tell the guys it's live, it's live. It's just you keep your fingers crossed all the time. I wanted to ask you, Mike, Bill Curry Ford. We love them here. They support the podcast. Mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. They're Tampa's first family of Ford, which means they were the first Ford dealer in town. They're still family owned by the Curry family. What can you say about them, Mike? I know you've had a lot of dealings on a lot of levels with the Curry family and Sean Sullivan, the general manager there. What do you want to tell everyone about Bill Curry Ford?
You talk about family atmosphere. You talk about the best family. You talk about a faith family. You talk about a family that is all community, all about the community and all about the people in Tampa Bay. It's the Curry family. And, you know, obviously with Mr. Curry and Jennifer, and then Sean, it's unbelievable the team that they've assembled and what they're doing inside their showroom, the amenities they have when you come in there, and just the presence and the atmosphere that they've built around there. It is so warm and it's so loving, and obviously they have the cars, but I think it's the atmosphere. It's what the Curry family offers each and every day to their customers and just to the community in general, and their outreach and what they do. And I'm honored to be a part of that and to be a part of the Curry family and help supporting them and in the community and what in our outreach and what we're trying to do.
Yeah, it's a real winning atmosphere. You go in there and it almost feels like a locker room of family who's all on the same page, and you know they treat people right. What are you driving these days, Mike?
F-150. Yeah, beautiful. My kids, they own Fords, and I bring them in there for service. It's they're awesome. They're down there waiting and greeting you, you know, with their hospitality as you're waiting for your car and whatever you have to do with it. It's all around from A to Z. It's an unbelievable thing with the Curry family got going on there. And again, like I said, I'm honored.
Well, it's great to hear. We appreciate them. And I'm sure during this football season, we'll be able to do some more fun things down there, right at Bill Curry Ford, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. BillCurryFord.com is the website. I got to tell you, Mike, I was listening to a SiriusXM NFL radio the other day, and I thought of you because Dan Quinn, the Falcons head coach, was on there, and he was talking about how surprised he was, and he's been around the game, you know, forever. He was talking about how surprised he was that players came back after having private workouts on their own and this whole messed up situation. He was surprised how much they accomplished on their own, how much chemistry they had built and how much work they had put in. He almost thought that they were at least where they would have been if they had coaches around. And you said the same thing 2 months ago, that don't worry about the players. They won't be wasting time on special teams. Not that it's a waste, but the offense won't take that time, and they'll build a lot, and Brady will know what to do. And I think that's going to be a big separator this season from the teams with veteran quarterbacks versus you know, new coaches and teams and players.
That's exciting to hear. Coach is saying that about his players, and it just the guys are taking it serious. They took the opportunity. Obviously, this horrible situation we got going on in our world with this pandemic, and they took that opportunity to make themselves better. And you know, I talk about it all the time. It's like, hey, what are you going to do? Are you going to sit and wait, or are you going to make yourself better and try to get something accomplished, you know, during this time? So again, with Tom Brady, he's been there, right? He's been there a long time, and he's known for working with his wide receivers and doing what he does in the offseason with them as far as getting the timing right, the routes right, critiquing each and every play, and trying to get their timing down between the wide receiver and the quarterback. You know, if you were doing that and obviously being productive each and every day, it's going to show. It's going to show now, and it will show. It will definitely show.
You mentioned Tom Brady. Could you imagine, Mike, playing 20 years, and I said not physically, but just the amount of knowledge you would accumulate playing 20 years, plus Tom Brady's played, I think, something like 40 playoff games. Just how much knowledge is actually in his head?
What a huge asset. What a huge asset. What a great landing by the Buccaneers in bringing Tom Brady. But at the same time, it kind of tells you Tom Brady could have selected any team in the National Football League, right? He selects Tampa. So that's a huge tribute to Light and Arians and what they have put together, right? What they have assembled and the players that we have, and we just needed a couple more pieces. And Tom Brady says, hey, those guys, they're good. Right, we have a chance because Tom's not going to play his last 2 or 3 years without having a chance to go where he's been going for the last 10 years, either the championship game or the Super Bowl, right? So, again, that's just a huge compliment that Tom Brady came to Tampa to finish his career and to be able to help us get to the promised land.
You know, he clearly chose the Bucs, and they were waiting for him with open arms. Mike, with the way the crowd situation is going to be this year, no fans in the Superdome on opening day, and a lot of teams are not going to have fans. What about the guys on any roster? And you've, I'm sure, played with a lot of them. I don't know how this fit in for you personally, but a lot of guys really feed off the crowd, and they get a lot of juice from that on game day. How do you think that might affect things?
It's going to be really difficult. I love playing in front of, obviously, you know, everybody does. You want to play in front of the 60, 70, 80,000 people, packed house, you know, on the road or, you know, at home, and obviously at home. It's going to be difficult, but this is where we get that mindset, that professionalism has to come in any situation. You have to perform. It's no different than what they're doing right now for the last 2 weeks and what they're going to continue to do for the next how many weeks is practicing. You know what I mean? There's nobody there. Other than the coaches, obviously, and you still have to perform. You have to make a team. You have to get better. You have to make your team better, whatnot. And then you're gonna have to take that to the field, obviously, on game day. But it will be difficult. It's gonna be a challenge. But you're seeing other leagues do it right now, hockey, basketball, whatnot. They're doing it. So again, it's gonna be difficult. It's gonna be weird at first. Just gotta train your mind.
If you had to pick one player from the old-time Buccaneers, one guy from the glory days Buccaneers that you played with, who would it be that you could tell fans that this guy really needed the crowd to feed off? He might not have been the same player if he was playing against an empty stadium because he was that much in love with the whole fan situation. Was there one guy?
I would say no. There's no question. You know, Warren Sapp making a sack, you know. He's getting the crowd going, right? And anybody, but again, you know, when that whistle's blown and when that ball snapped, you know, all the guys I've played with, man, we just love the game so much, and we love being out there with each other, and it's no different from what we did on practice field.
I got you.
What we did in the game, so I'm gonna say no. I didn't play with any guys that really, you know, we thrived off it. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
It got us fired up and you know whatnot. But again, when you're in that zone. You know, when I was running the ball, doing stuff and playing, I didn't hear the crowd. I mean, because I was just so focused on what I had to do until after the play was done. You know what I mean? Crowd
sure.
There, we want our people there. We want all the excitement. But again, you gotta love the game, and you gotta be out there for, you know, the purpose of your teammates, and you're doing something so special in your life and playing football at an age that a lot of people don't do it.
I had to ask. I know that you guys are professionals, and if you can't get up for that 6 second play, that 5 second play, then there's something wrong. But
right.
I figured I'd throw it past you. Now, of course, this is Mike Allstott here on the Ira Kaufman podcast, presented by Bill Curry Ford. A couple more questions for you, Mike. Thought of this the other day, looking at Tom Brady in practice. And of course, it's a different situation, different team, different quarterback, totally different, and different leadership on the team. But when Brad Johnson arrived in 2001 to the Bucs, do you remember anything that Johnson changed from his influence? He was 33 years old. Was there anything that he sort of changed a little bit, or his leadership that maybe took the team up a notch or stood out to the guys?
I know his presence in the huddle, right? His presence in the huddle and his relaxed demeanor about him. I mean, he would joke around, he'd be serious, everything, you know what I mean? He was fired up when we made a play. You know, but just cool stuff like that. It all wasn't like, serious. He was a part of the game. He was a part of each player's excitement. You know what I mean? He was in the huddle making jokes or whatever, laughing, you know. But at the same time, I think that, you know, every player has their different type of way to do things. And Brad was, again, no question, got the job done. We won a Super Bowl with Brad, right? And
sure.
So, and I loved him. You know, I love it. Was just him as general. His personality was off the charts. It was great. You know what I mean?
So he fit in. He really fit in immediately then. And
immediately. But okay. The thing is, it was his huddle, right? You know, he made us all relax, making jokes and laughing, whatever, serious. You know, whatever it took. He knew the right mood at the right time for us to be, you know, to have that moment. Obviously, he was in the league a long time before he came and saw us and
right.
Everything, but, you know, just a great guy in general, great player, and knew what to do with the ball, knew the offense, knew defenses, very knowledgeable, but at the same time, didn't act bigger, right? Didn't act bigger than anybody else. And I think that's what the respect was, too. You know what I mean? Got the job done, did what we had to do, and at the same time, is made huge plays, but was always a part of the group, right? Was always in the group.
It's important you mention that, because a lot of the guys, even though it's early, it hasn't been much time, a lot of the Buccaneers are saying Brady, they're shocked that he feels like one of the guys. And
that's cool.
Feels down to earth, feels like a regular guy, even though they still look at him and see, oh my God, this is Tom Brady, which eventually...
And I think that's the first, right? You're right. Tom's had so much success, been in the league so long, right? You don't know how he's going to be when he comes, right? And that makes me feel great that, again, he's being part of it. Now everybody's loosening up around him, and he's coaching, he's playing, he's doing his thing, and he's doing what Tom has been doing. Perception versus reality is a lot. It can get mixed up a little bit.
The guys keep saying he's constantly coaching. He must really love it, which I think they feed off that too, because they see a guy who's totally committed.
That's great. I mean, when you see a guy after 20 years, loves something so much, right? That helps everybody. And he loves coming to work. He loves coming to the field. He's doing his extra work. That's just contagious. When you have that, and that's just filtering down from the older guys that might be getting, oh, practice. I've been doing it for 15 years and blah, blah. And all of a sudden you have a guy come in here that loves to do it. Man, that just helps. That helps your team, the morale, everything around. And it just shows the young guys or the guys that maybe didn't know how to be professionals.
It's fun to see. I actually had a guy text me last night, somebody on the inside, who said one thing that players are, not all players, but some players are really surprised about, is that the heat doesn't seem to bother Brady, whereas some other guys, a couple guys off on the side had to throw up, a couple of guys just doing the normal Tampa summer thing. But
you got to remember, some of these other guys are probably running 30, 40 yards every play. Tom's taking a 3-step drop, 5-step drop, 7-step drop. You know what I mean?
That's true.
But again, yeah, you know, but Tom keeps his body in great condition. We know that. It's well documented. You know what I mean? He's going to keep himself in shape. He's going to take care of his body. And if he didn't, he wouldn't still be playing for all these years. So
yeah, it's true. Yeah, he takes the drop, and nobody's allowed to hit him. It's a little different, but
right.
Last one for you, Mike. You're a high school football coach. A lot of people don't realize it in Pinellas County, and this has been a very tough time for high school football coaches with having to be separated from the kids, and now you're going back to play and restart your season on Monday. What can you say about that? What have you been able to accomplish with these guys, maybe either online or maybe by phone, or just how this has all worked out and how you think it's going to go for the kids this year?
Yeah, it's been challenging. We were in the middle of our winter workouts, lifting and conditioning each every day, and all of a sudden that came to a halt and you don't see the kids. They reopened it up a little bit. You had social distancing, you know, groups of nine in each group. So you had to be very, very creative in what you did and how you did it and clean and sanitize. Oh, it was a new world. It was a new learning experience on how to do this and be productive in a matter of the time that we have with kids. But I thought our kids, they understood it. They took it serious. And with us coming together now, we're just ecstatic. And I think everybody is able to play high school football, but us in general, we're just so happy to be able to do something, because obviously it's so unfortunate with the spring sports from last year.
Right.
They were canceled, and especially when they're senior year, it doesn't really matter if you're a senior or not, but especially your senior year, you lost that, and you'll never get that back. And together, and we understand how serious it is, what we have to do, and follow the rules and everything regarding social distancing still, you know, when we're not obviously on the field, so we can and obviously maintain our season and be able to finish it off. It's just exciting all around right now that we're able to do something rather than sit around and wait.
Yeah, it's great to hear they're taking it seriously. I know you take it seriously. Everything related to coaching, whatever it is, you are all over it. And we got to just thank you again for coming here back to Ira's podcast. We thank Bill Curry Ford. And we'll talk to you soon, Mike.
I appreciate you. Thanks for having me. Thanks to the Curry family, Jennifer and Mr. Curry, for what they do for me and my family. But, you know, thank you again for having me on. And let me know when you want me next.
After a Bucks victory, which will come sooner rather than later.
That's awesome. Love to hear that. Thank you.
Well, that was a lot of fun, Ira. And thanks again to Mike Allstott, our friend, and Bill Curry Ford customer. And next podcast, we can touch on a couple of the issues he hit on there, Ira. There was some interesting stuff. Lee, I know that you wanted to go back to a couple of things you remember from practice that you didn't hit on when we were talking about that.
Another thing that jumped out at me at practice, really jumped out at me, and I think I've written about this before, I didn't say it earlier, but, you know, his accuracy is through the roof. Brady's accuracy just blew me away, his accuracy. I was talking with someone this morning, and they told me, remember who you're watching. You're watching arguably one of the best that ever has done it. So that shouldn't be a surprise. You know, he's like elite. There's only maybe one or two, three people in his stratosphere. So that should go without saying he's that accurate. He's not a normal quarterback. So point taken, that's number one. Number two, Brady's a whole lot more nimble than I ever thought. The Bucks had him, I wouldn't even call it a rollout. It certainly wasn't an option. It certainly wasn't a spread option. But he was bounced around in the pocket a whole lot more than I ever. Now, granted, I rarely watched the Patriots because I just was fed up with them, don't like them, don't care about them. And so I'd rarely watched the Patriots. At any rate, Brady was a whole lot more nimble than I ever expected.
Steve, if Arians had some designs and Leftwich to roll Brady out and use him in a variety of alignments and formations. Two things. One, from Brady's perspective, that has to be very, very refreshing, because watching him all these years in New England, you always knew where Brady was going to be. Now, that doesn't mean you could get to him, because priority one was keeping him upright, and they had a hell of an offensive line coach. Didn't have the greatest offensive line talent, but they got the job done until last year. I believe they took a big step back in that regard last year, and That's one of the reasons that Brady didn't throw for 35 touchdowns, and the offense struggled, and he didn't have great weapons. But he was under more pressure than he's accustomed to. But, Steve, from Brady's perspective, that would be very refreshing, and it would go along with that line. He's having fun playing football for the first time in quite a while. But, Steve, refreshing only goes so far, and I think there is a danger. There's a flip side to being innovative with Tom Brady and trying to get him out of his usual pocket spot, and that is you never want to make him even a smidgen more prone to getting hit. You don't. He don't like getting hit. Who does? Especially Brady. He's not used to it, and he hates it. Not as much as he hates throwing an interception, but he hates it, being on the ground.
Smidgen, Ira, that's a quality Brooklyn word right there, smidgen.
Smidgen, baby. But, you know, Lee, if there's a danger of getting him hit a little more than usual, and we know the beating Carson Palmer took in Arizona, and Palmer was not particularly nimble.
Jameis, too.
You got to be a little careful there, Lee.
I think there's two words. I think every Bucs fan will agree with me. There's two words fans pray they don't hear about until March. Blaine Gabbert.
You took the words out of my mouth, guys.
Hell, look, you know. Brady, I think, is very much like Matt Ryan. His movement in the pocket is extraordinary. Extraordinary. And very nimble in the pocket, very smart in the pocket. But, you know, even if he's practicing the rollout stuff and some other things like that, I don't see them even doing it. And I don't think Brady's done it because he didn't have to. I mean, he's smart enough to get rid of it quickly and stay safe. And I just don't think we're going to see too much of it. But we will see some of those super smart runs for a first down. Brady was notorious for his quarterback sneaks in New England as well. And, you know, he's definitely got some athleticism. But I see him more of a, you know, a smarter Matt Ryan as far as moving in the pocket and just being able to rack up the yardage when and not take as many sacks as Ryan does.
I think that's fair to say. And
all right, Sage, a couple of things I wanted to run past you. O.J. Howard, now he spoke earlier this week, and he was asked about his discussions. I believe Kevin O'Donnell asked him about his chat with Bruce Arians and Jason Light and as far as his status and, you know, prior to this season, and Howard didn't want to talk about it. He didn't pretend that there was like, no, nothing going on, or I don't know what you're talking about. He didn't want to talk about it. And he really talked about how Tom Brady's coaching him up and he seemed very upbeat. It really seemed to reflect that there was something wrong last year with O.J. Howard on this team. I don't know if it was O.J. or the coaches or Jameis or a mix or who knows what. Arians seemed to make some excuses for him, saying this offense is very tough for tight ends, big learning curve, which, come on. You know, I mean, we're not stupid over here. I don't know, Ira, what did you make of all that?
I think this is one of the most encouraging dynamics coming out of training camp, Lee, but it's only training camp. And nobody's hit O.J. Howard in the mouth. And out of the corner of his eye, he doesn't see a safety closing in on him. So we don't want to go crazy here. But, Lee, the dynamic seems to be that Brady has taken a special interest in Howard, and why wouldn't he? Lee, he sees the physical specimen. That's what Brady sees. And he sees a guy that if he applies himself and focuses, could be very, very effective. And we know how Brady loves to throw to tight ends, and we don't know what kind of shape Gronkowski's going to be in week one in New Orleans. It all seems upbeat for O.J. Howard in mid-August. A lot can change by mid-September. But it seems like there's a little bit of a sense of urgency. Maybe he's got it. And I've told stories on this podcast how Jimmy Giles, I believe the third man into the Bucs' Ring of Honor, number three, you know, certainly the best tight end in Buck history, nobody close, he's been very disappointed in O.J. Howard's lack of production, relative lack of production, considering that Jimmy Giles says when he looked at Howard coming out of college, he saw himself, a big guy who could really move and stretch a defense from the tight end position. And you know, look, Lee, Howard's got a lot to prove. He's a middling blocker, middling. And that's supposed to be one of his strengths, supposed to be a willing. He ain't no Gronkowski when it comes to blocking, Lee. He's not. And he drops too many balls, and he seems a little bit distracted. So my jury's out on Howard. You know what I've said. If they get a good offer, I think about moving him. But it seems like at this point, Lee, Brady's having a very positive effect on him.
Yeah, I think so, too. And now, I had heard, and this really shouldn't surprise anyone, I had heard when a couple years ago when Jameis got suspended, about half of the wide receivers slash tight end room turned on him. They're done with him. They lost him. And now a couple of receivers that came around, like, hey, he's still our quarterback. We're going to win. He's going to be, you know, it's going to be because of him. You know, put this stuff aside. Let's go forward. Not everybody did. And I heard one of the players that was done with Jameis was O.J. Howard. Now, I can't confirm that. That's what I heard. And the person I heard this from has always been pretty reliable in the past. Now, Steve, didn't you come across some information that O.J. Howard wasn't exactly pounding beers at Big Storm in celebration of over the fact that the Bucks traded for Gronkowski?
Just that he wasn't happy here, and that was that. That he just did not want to necessarily, wasn't necessarily all in. Is probably the best way to say it. That he just wasn't that happy here, and that's in the archives at JoeBucksFan.com. Anybody can look that up. And at this point, hey, he's here, and he's excited. And like Ira said, it's all good right now, but he's got to earn Tom Brady's trust, and that's really his challenge going forward. Otherwise, he's not going to get the ball on opening day, and he probably won't be happy if he's got 7 targets in the first 3 weeks and he's relegated to just blocking. You know, we'll see how that goes forward.
It would be a shame if Howard joins a list, and I think it's a long list of tight ends that are chosen, and it happens a lot. Tight ends are picked, you know, in the first round, and the guy's like, you know, 6'6", 230, and can move, and there's been a lot of them. And a lot of them don't work out. They don't translate to the pro level. I don't know what the heck it is. Not everybody turns into Tony Gonzalez over here. There's been a lot of tight ends taken in first rounds, and they don't turn out to be Jason Witten or Antonio Gates. I know it happens with other positions too, but tight ends in particular, you know, those big tight ends that can move, you got to have more than that. And so far, Howard hasn't shown that he has more than that.
Ira, we got to remind everybody that our first round pick is Bill Curry Ford. Phenomenal offers all weekend long. This is the weekend to go shopping. It's right near the end of the month. General Manager Sean Sullivan is happy to work with you, eager to work with you, and his whole team is just top-notch. Family-owned dealership for the last 60 years. Personal service, Ira Kaufman discount. Get to BillCurryFord.com. One nugget, Ira, that I wanted to throw out there that I think it's certainly interesting and could be important. I asked Harold Goodwin about, you know, some of these plans in case coaches got sick with the coronavirus. And of course, we're very happy that Florida's numbers for the virus keep dropping as far as total cases. It's moving way in the right direction. But I asked him about that. And in his response, he talked about how he's staying away from Joe Gilbert. They're trying to stay away from each other so they don't get sick at once. If it came to that, he said, but there's other guys on the staff that could help coach the offensive line. And he mentioned that Todd McNair, the running backs coach, he said that, well, when McNair came back, you know, we had gotten a taste of that because the assistant running backs coach had taken over. And remember, there was one coach who the report came out had contracted the virus. So it really seemed from what he said that it was Todd McNair, the running backs coach. And, you know, they seem very well prepared if this happens and that big giant staff has to help.
I think that's great news for Buck fans. It's got to be awkward, you know, Lee, because I believe Goodwin also has a title of run game coordinator. I believe he does.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Whatever that means. And, of course, he's got to work closely with the O-line coach, Lee, and he's got to work closely with McNair as the running back coach, yet, you know, the virus makes you think twice about doing anything except the Zoom meeting. So it is awkward, but I think it's very positive news for Buck fans to know that this organization has taken this pandemic very seriously. I think the Bucks deserve credit. Lee, as a franchise, apparently have done a bang-up job at one buck. None of us have gotten in there as the media.
Nor will we,
which is probably a good thing in the long run for the organization. But the Bucks have done a good job, Lee, with the protocols. You know, players are talking about adhering to it and not being Ryan Jensen talking about not being the one guy that brings everything down. Buck fans got to love that kind of talk about players taking responsibility, coaches being very careful. They got Tom Moore over there. They got Arians. It's really been well done over there at One Buck Place.
You know, as far as the coaches go, I think they almost have to. How many guys do they have 55, 60 and over? And, you know, number one, that's a major risk with the virus. Number two, you know, we don't know what their medical backgrounds are, so that could add to it. So they don't have any choice but to be successful unless they want to be reckless with their lives.
Right.
I think the NFL as a whole needs to be committed, not just the Bucs. You don't hear much of anything about players getting COVID. You don't hear that much about it. And I think this protocol the NFL came up, well, along with the NFLPA, it was in conjunction with them, that they did this right. And you don't hear any stories about, like, those idiots with the Indians who blame the media for them not getting drunk. It was the media's fault. Really? Really? The media made you leave your hotel room and go out with a couple of babes and pound beers? Really?
Hey Lee, sometimes I read Ira's columns and I need a drink.
Yeah, that'll make a drink. This is encouraging. Not just for football, but for society. That, you know, if you do the right things, you could, you know, go forward with your life.
And what's even more impressive, Steve, is it's not happening in a bubble. Unlike the NBA and the NHL, which they are having spectacular results. I've been watching the hockey playoffs. It's great action. I mean, it's fantastic. I don't think the game's dropped one bit from whether there was 20,000 fans in the stands. But the Bucks and the NFL are not in a bubble, Steve, and they're doing it well and they're doing it smart, and I take my hat off to them.
It's gone great. There's only like 10 guys on the COVID list, but it's a long, long, long season. And
long preseason still. Not preseason, but offseason.
Yeah.
Months ago.
And when you look at, you know, you start to just do the math on all the players mingling with their families and their kids and the kids going back to school and all the numbers, you know, you hope that the Bucks are one of the lucky ones. And, you know, but so far it's been absolutely fantastic, and we all have our fingers crossed.
Quick question about what Goodwin said, that he's kind of staying away from Joe Gilbert, the other offensive line coach. Isn't that sound like sort of what Arians told you, Steve, when you asked him about potentially keeping a backup quarterback in quarantine away from the team in case, you know, an emergency happens and a couple quarterbacks get sick? Well, this guy will be, you know, quarantined and supposedly safe. Isn't that something similar?
Arians was one of the first coaches to say that he would strongly consider a quarantine quarterback. So it's in that realm. It was just interesting to hear Goodwin say it the way he did. I believe the way they split it up, Ira, that Goodwin handles the tackles and Gilbert handles the inside linemen. And then he's the run game coordinator, like Lee said, whatever that means. Sort of he puts together the run package and presents it to Arians and Leftwich, and then they dissect it from there. But yeah, I mean, I would understand, you know. I mean, gosh, imagine if all the defensive backs coaches are lost for 3 or 4 weeks, you might have, you know, Bruce Arians stepping in to coach these guys, you know, for a couple of weeks. You just don't know how that's going to look, and certainly they're not going to cancel a game because five assistant coaches can't be there. That would never happen. All right, Ira, you know what? We have another podcast coming up this week. And it's going to be chock full of action because on late Wednesday, we are going to hear all of the interviews on SiriusXM NFL Radio. It's Buccaneers Day, Wednesday afternoon and evening. So Tom Brady is going to be talking, Bruce Arians, Jason Light. We will have a whole rack of stuff to dissect that a lot of fans will not have heard and that they won't hear on Buccaneers.com. So we're excited about that. Maybe we'll even get a little crazy on Friday and do a third podcast, a short one. I don't know, Ira, but send the fans out of here. I know you're upbeat as you open this podcast, but send them out of here with some wisdom.
Look, I'm going to return to my original opening statement. We are sitting here, August 19th. The summer's almost over, gentlemen. Football's in the air, and it's all good. It's all good for the 2020 Bucks. Long way to go, but they could not have asked for to be in a better position, perched right now, you know, close to that opener. We shall see what happens, but Buck fans are very, very encouraged right now. They got every right to be.
Fun stuff, Sage. We will be back with podcast number 2 later this week. Our thanks to Florida's Elite Restoration. If you see water in your home at any time, see some mold, call them first before you call anyone else. Get to their website, floridaseliterestoration.com. They are there for you around the clock. The phone call is free. The assessment is free at your home. Florida's Elite Restoration and Big Storm Beer. That's Florida's best craft beer, bigstormbrewery.com. You can click on the storm tracker at joebucksfan.com to find where the beer is sold near you. And, of course, Bill Curry Ford, our presenting sponsor. Get to their website to start shopping for trucks, used vehicles, whatever it is, billcurryford.com.